Hello, everyone. This is Michael Ann Conley, and you're listening to Habits into Health. In this podcast, we are all about helping you create your own personal and unique habit change plan. You'll get a chance to practice approaches that encourage you to use your bodily experience to help shape your changes. I call this letting your body lead so that your mind doesn't have to. You'll also hear information from other sources to give you more choices in changing behaviors that create problems for yourself or for other people. In this episode, we're going to talk about stonewalling, which is a way that many people deal with anger. And, you know, to tell you the truth, it really doesn't get people what they really want. This is a part of a conversation that I've been having with you about the A in HALT. HALT is an acronym that reminds us not to get too hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. Because when you're focused on changing a behavior pattern that has been creating challenges, slipping back into old habits could only be a moment away. To prevent relapse, and that's however you decide to define that, it's a good idea to build your ability to recognize the signs before you act out. Or in the case of stonewalling, it could also be before you act in. First up, though, we have an experiential exercise so that you can tune into yourself. In the practices we do in Habits into Health, I invite you to follow some suggestions that can assist you in putting your experience first and setting aside explanations or trying to figure things out. Even though I may ask you to connect with yourself in a certain way, the question is an invitation to explore, not a command about what you should do or feel or not do or feel. You don't have to search for answers, and there's no right or wrong way to do the exercise. Imagine that. There really is only your way, and that's the point. What's important is to notice your own unique and personal way of responding. So, if you search for answers, for instance, the exercise for you could be an exploration of how you actually use yourself bodily to search for answers. Well, what actually does that mean? Let's try something out and see if it helps. When I ask you, what time is it? What do you do? Just notice. What time is it? Perhaps you do something with your eyes in response to the question. What direction do your eyes move? You might notice that you look at your watch, for example. Well, how do you use yourself to look at your watch, or to look for a clock on the wall, or to look at your phone, anywhere that you might be able to go to answer that question, what time is it? What becomes activated in you, especially muscularly? What happens with your head, for instance? Do you make any movements, like turning your head? Do you still yourself? Do you do this quickly or slowly? So what time is it? Now you might wonder, why does this matter? And okay, on one level, it doesn't matter at all. You can take it all at face value. But if you are motivated to change a habit, then it pays off to pay attention. Behavior is usually defined as those noticeable large movements. But these obvious actions don't come out of nowhere. They actually emerge as an accumulation of smaller, more discrete organizations. And the fact that these smaller activities are not visibly seen doesn't make them irrelevant. They are, in fact, the building blocks of what we call behavior, the obvious behavior. In the world today, there's a lot of interest in knowing, in understanding. Know thyself is an old catchphrase, and the usual frame is, well, know thyself psychologically. How would your life be different if knowing yourself was based in your whole self, which is larger than and contains the psychological? And it also contains the social, the emotional, the relational, everything. And what is your response to this question? How would your life be different if knowing yourself was based in your whole self? And by that I mean, from where in you does movement, pressure, tension, temperature, and even moisture arise? And if you don't know, you're not alone. If you find yourself searching for an answer, step back and become attentive to where this searching occurs in you. You might say, oh, I recognize that I make myself still, or I brace in my back, or when I'm searching for an answer, I feel this fluttery energy in my forehead, or I tighten in my mouth. Whatever it is that you notice, whether you have words for it or not, this is a different way of knowing yourself, and it's valuable. And I believe it's essential to the process of changing those larger behavior patterns that are creating problems for yourself and for others. It can be very useful to approach your habit change with self-knowing in this way. Whether it's a behavior that concerns only you, and one of my examples of that is you want to lose some weight, but the people you know, the people you're around, aren't bothered by your extra pounds. Or maybe it's a pattern that's destructive to your well-being, to your life, and to your relationships. An example of that is you've gambled away your family's life savings. Or you're in a downward spiral with street drugs, or even prescription drugs. To know thyself involves growing your capacity to influence your responses within yourself and in relationship to your outer world. By doing this, you are practicing being in yourself and in the world at the same time. So what time is it? And how did you use yourself to answer that or to not answer that? Especially when it comes to anger, the ability to modulate your behavior, your responses, could be pretty important, right? If this approach to self-engagement is something you want to explore further, you can listen to Habits Into Health podcast by going to habitsintohealth.com and clicking on the podcast menu. You can also find links to follow us on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. My name is Michael Ann Conley, and I'm the host of this show. Today, we're going to continue in a conversation about the A in HALT, which stands for anger. Well, because letting yourself get too angry can make you vulnerable to slipping back into that habit that you want to say goodbye to. Specifically, today's topic is stonewalling. Consider an argument you had with someone else, your spouse, or a friend, a roommate, coworker. It could be anyone, and the argument could be about anything. Did it result in one of you doing the silent treatment? That's one example of stonewalling, which doesn't happen in every disagreement, but when it does, it means that at least one person has emotionally withdrawn from the interaction. When you stonewall, you create a wall between yourself and the other person so that dialogue can't happen. It's a unilateral decision. One person makes the decision for both people that there will be no further discussion. Sometimes the person will physically remove themselves, like turn a cold shoulder, walk out the door, sometimes slam the door. Sometimes it'll be less direct, like changing the subject of a conversation or just shutting up altogether in stony silence. Stonewalling doesn't always happen when someone is openly angry. Sometimes we stonewall when we're upset and we don't know how to talk about it, or we're afraid of another person's reaction. So in that case, we avoid the potential for conflict by not opening a conversation, or we refuse to talk about our concerns if the other person invites a conversation. Have you ever been on either side of this? Have you ever refused to talk with someone because you were angry, or held back from saying something because you're afraid that they'll become angry? Do people in your life experience a silent treatment from you? Or have you experienced a silent treatment from others? Have you ever removed yourself from an argument or disagreement and refused even subsequently to talk about what happened? Is it so hard for you to listen to another point of view that you shut down? Are you so committed to being right in a situation that you won't compromise or negotiate a conflict. Healthy relating usually involves the ability to agree to disagree, because people are unlikely to agree about everything. Are you unable to do this, or are you connected to someone who is unable to do this? It's not very fun, is it? Sometimes when things calm down, people can bring their stone wall down and talk about what's bothering them. It may be that the feelings between you will soften, but it may also be that issues that have come up are never discussed. And guess what? They sit around there waiting for the next argument. If you find yourself storing up feelings that continue to weigh you down, then I suggest that you listen to the Habits Into Health podcast on sandbagging, because that's a troublesome way to deal with anger too. Dr. John Gottman is a psychologist and researcher in Seattle, and he has studied what makes marriages succeed and what predicts divorce. He and his wife, Julie, created the Gottman Relationship Institute to help people improve their chances at relationship and marriage success. They've learned that one of the factors that increases the likelihood of divorce is a pattern of stonewalling. After all, how can a relationship, whether it's a marriage or a friendship, survive when one or both persons refuse to relate? What can you do when stonewalling has happened? I can think of some situations in my own life where I learned some things about this. In one case, a colleague and I were in a situation in which he was upset about something I'd said in a meeting. We agreed to have a cup of tea one morning and talk about it. And we listened to each other. And as is often the case, we each had our different perspectives about the event. We saw the same situation from our own perspective. And even after discussing it, we came to the conclusion that we would have to agree to disagree. I understood his point of view and why he had done what he did. He understood more about my point of view and why I had come to the decision to say what I said, even though he wanted it to be different, even though I wanted it to be different. We agreed to disagree. We understood that each of us had our reasons. We shook hands and have continued to be friendly. In another situation, a housemate and I had a difference of opinion about something. I don't remember what it was anymore, which is actually kind of important. But I was really angry, and he was upset too. A wall went up between us. There was a lot of silent treatment going around, back and forth. But we lived together, and this really felt unbearable to me. It was worse than whatever I was angry about. And I remember a moment when I made a decision. It was very hard, but it was one of those cases where stepping through that challenge had a good result. I could have continued to stonewall, and I decided not to. He was sitting in the living room, and I went over to him, and I said something like, "I'm still angry. And I'm not ready to talk about what happened yet." And he dittoed that. And things warmed up between us right away. It was interesting because it turns out that all it took was reaching out to say I wasn't ready. We never actually talked about what happened. And like I said, I don't even remember what it was we were fighting about. Today, almost 20 years later, he is one of my closest friends. These are two examples that turned out well, because I believe both parties were able to calm down enough to talk. In the first case, we were both capable of continuing to relate, even though we disagreed. In the second case, we didn't need an analysis of everything that had gone down. We only needed the intention of both of us to soften hard feelings. I wish I could say that in every case of stonewalling, things work out. But no matter how much ability you've grown in yourself to agree to disagree, or to bring your own wall down, or to keep yourself open, if the other person isn't able to do the same, stonewalling can be enough on its own to bring a relationship to an end. I've experienced these situations as well. and each case was very difficult because all I could do was accept that there was no longer a relationship. The refusal to communicate is a communication that there is no relationship, whether this occurs between friends, lovers, or family members. It's a little bit easier to manage if it's friends, the friendship ends. It's tough to handle if it's between yourself and a lover. If it's a family member, then it creates pain not just for yourself and the other person, but for everyone in the family. So I know how hard it can be to make changes in this. I want to summarize some important things that I've learned about stonewalling in the hopes that it can support you too. This list is not definitive. It could go longer, but I've just chosen 8 things that I came up with. So first, it's possible and even healthy to hold to your own point of view, even if it differs from someone else's. You don't have to agree in order to get along. 2, it's okay if someone else disagrees with you, even if they believe you are wrong in your beliefs or behavior. 3, there is no right or wrong. There are only different perspectives. 4, it's a terrific feeling to engage with another person who understands this, because being able to speak truthfully and listen openly is so much more important than whatever happened between you. 5, the details don't really matter. You don't have to discuss what happened or the perspectives that each person had about a situation to heal a rift. 6, if you have to choose between being in relationship and being right, choose relationship, even if the other person doesn't choose it with you. 7, stonewalling hurts everyone, so speak up when you have a concern. Don't hide out. 8, choosing to bring down your wall, even if another does not, is a habit that you'll want to keep. It's time to sign off for now. Stay tuned as we continue to explore ways that you can create your plan for changing a habit, for sustaining new behaviors, and growing yourself into your best future. In Habits into Health, we focus on giving you more choices and making the changes you want to make, regardless of the habit you're dealing with. Bring your questions and comments to habitsintohealth.com. This is Michael Ann Conley, and you've been listening to Habits into Health. I support you in turning your old habits around into healthy possibilities for your future. Thanks for joining me.